Welcome to NTD News Today.
Here are today's top stories.
The historic trial of former President Trump continues with jury selection. Arlene Richards gives us the updates.
A January 6th case with a possible impact on Trump soon before the Supreme Court. What it's about and what it could mean for J6 defendants.
Another Republican joins the effort to unseat House Speaker Mike Johnson. Johnson is proposing a complicated foreign aid plan. NTD's Luis Martinez in D.C.
The impeachment of Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. House lawmakers expected to move forward with their case today. We have the details.
President Biden returning to the battleground state of Pennsylvania. Former President Trump is accusing Biden of trying to raise taxes for average Americans. NTD's Iris Tau in Pennsylvania.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is working to fend off Chinese espionage during his trip to China. What are the precautions his team is taking?
This is NTD News Today, live from our NTD global headquarters. Here are Stephania Cox and Chris Beers.
Jury selection continues in the New York courtroom as former President Trump's so-called hush money trial enters its second day.
Trump addressed reporters upon arriving this morning, calling the trial a disgrace. Take a listen.
Thank you very much. This is a trial that should have never been brought. It's a trial that is being looked at all over the world, they're calling. They're looking at it and analyzing it. Every legal pundit, every legal scholar said this trial is a disgrace. We have a Trump-hating judge. We have a judge who shouldn't be on this case. He's totally conflicted. But this is a trial that should never happen. It should have been thrown out a long time ago. If you look at Jonathan Turley, Andy McCarthy, all great legal scholars. There's not one that we've been able to find that said this should be a trial. I was paying a lawyer and marked it down as a legal expense, some accountant, I didn't know, marked it down as a legal expense. That's exactly what it was. And you get indicted over that? I should be right now in Pennsylvania, in Florida, in many other states, North Carolina, Georgia, campaigning. This is all coming from the Biden White House because the guy can't put two sentences together. He can't campaign. They're using this in order to try and win an election, and it's not working that way. It's working the opposite way. So check that out, legal expense. It's called legal expense. That's what you're supposed to call it.
Mr. Trump,
you get indicted on that. Nobody's ever seen it. Nobody has ever seen anything like it. So thank you very much for coming. I am now going to sit down. The voters understand it. All you have to do is look at the polls. This is a sham trial, and the judge should recuse himself. Thank you very much.
Trump faces 34 felony counts. Prosecutors accuse him of falsifying business records regarding money he paid to former adult film actress Stormy Daniels before the 2016 election.
We are joined now by our legal correspondent, Arlene Richards, to help us break down the major developments. Arlene, what sticks out to you most?
Well, I think what sticks out the most from yesterday is that the attorneys spent most of their time in the morning and part of the afternoon trying to have the judge listen to some of their pretrial motions. Now, the prosecutors in particular wanted to ask the judge, or did ask the judge, about what evidence they can present at trial. They wanted clarification on that because they have this witness, Michael Cohen, who is a convicted liar, and they are worried about whether or not the jury will believe what he has to say. So they need more evidence to corroborate his testimony. So they asked the judge whether or not they can bring in this Access Hollywood tape, which has former President Trump in the background making some kind of a derogatory comment about women. And the other thing that they want to bring in is the testimony of Karen McDougal. Now, she's a model and actress who says that she also had an affair with Trump back in 2006 and that he paid her $150,000 to keep quiet. So the judge did say that the Access Hollywood tape would be too prejudicial, so he's not going to allow that in, but he is going to allow Ms. McDougal to testify.
And what stands out for you on the defense side?
Well, on the defense side, the judge did quickly deny their motion to have him recuse himself. He said he's not going to address that again until after the appellate court rules on that. Also, the defense is quite concerned about whether or not Trump can get a fair trial. They once again are talking about this jury questionnaire and the fact that they were not asked whether or not they like Trump. And they think that if jurors could say that, then they could immediately excuse them. But the judge says, you know, the jurors can be excused automatically anyway if they say that they can't be fair and impartial. And that has happened yesterday. A lot of jurors were excused that way. And they also can be excused for other reasons, which they don't have to explain. But the judge did change his mind on when the jurors have to answer the actual questionnaires. Initially, they had to stand up, answer the questions, and then field follow-up questions from the attorneys and from the judge. But now he's saying that when they come up for their turn, all the other jurors will have to leave the room so that they feel a little more comfortable. So out of perspective, 96 jurors that came in yesterday, around 60 of them were excused for one reason or the other, and around 10 of those were questioned by the end of the day, and one of those 10 was dismissed.
And what can we expect for today, Arlene?
So today, around 32 potential jurors will return from yesterday to be questioned either by the judge or by the attorneys or both. The judge will also hold a Sandoval hearing, which is something that's unique to New York, in which the prosecutor has to explain, you know, what bad acts they are planning to raise about Trump. What previous bad acts are they going to raise? And the judge will have to decide whether or not they're too prejudicial to Trump. Like, for example, they wouldn't be able to talk about previous or current indictments that are ongoing. They wouldn't be able to raise that to the jury. And then the jury selection process will continue today. More jurors will come in to replace the ones that leave. And this process could take some time because there are hundreds of New Yorkers that are going to be, you know, coming in to the courtroom. And it appears that many of those jurors have already decided that they can't be fair and impartial, as I said from yesterday. And according to one CNN report this morning, one juror who is a lawyer and he works for the government, he said he could be fair and impartial and that it wouldn't be hard for him to do that. Another juror said it would be very hard to be fair and impartial. So we'll have to see as this process continues on, you know, if they can get the 12 that they need.
For sure. Thank you so much for this update.
Thank you.
Arlene Richards, thank you. The Supreme Court will discuss today certain charges against January 6 defendants. The case known as Fisher v. United States could also affect the federal election case against former President Trump.
The court will look into whether a 2002 law from the Enron scandal applies to some January 6 defendants. That includes Joseph Fisher, a former police officer from Pennsylvania, who was in the Capitol that day.
Fisher argues that the charge against him of obstructing an official proceeding isn't right, as that section of the law is primarily about evidence tampering. The case went to the Supreme Court after lower courts disagreed. The White House has rejected an effort by House Republicans to get President Biden to testify before lawmakers. This in the GOP's stalled impeachment inquiry.
The White House yesterday dismissed the invitation sent to Biden last month, calling it a partisan charade.
House Republicans seek information related to the Biden family's business dealings and what the GOP characterized as an influence peddling scheme.
In a letter to Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer, the White House wrote that the impeachment inquiry has only succeeded in turning up evidence that Biden has done nothing wrong.
President Biden and his wife Jill on Monday released their tax returns, together earning just under $620,000. This came mostly from the president's $400,000 salary and pensions from previous jobs.
The First Lady also earned $86,000 from her position as a professor at Northern Virginia Community College.
The Bidens paid more than $146,000 in income tax, which equates to a tax rate of 23.7%. The White House issued a statement saying it believes all Oval Office occupants should be honest with the American people.
That's a reference to the longstanding tradition of presidents publicly releasing their tax returns.
It's also a dig at former President Trump, who bucked tradition by not releasing them.
Still to come, Maine passes a new voting law that critics say sidesteps the Constitution. What it could mean for future elections.
And two Colorado counties are pushing back against sanctuary state laws. They're now suing the state and its governor.
The Maui Wildfire Department will release a report on how it responded to the most devastating wildfire in recent U.S. history. More in just a moment here on NTD News Today. And we have more updates on the conflicts in the Middle East. Israel has vowed to retaliate following an aerial attack from Iran over the weekend.
Israel's war cabinet convened earlier today to discuss its response. It's unclear if a decision has been reached.
Israel's army chief told troops yesterday that Iran will face the consequences for its actions. The extent of Israel's potential retaliation is unknown, but U.S. officials told NBC News their assessment.
They said the response will likely be limited and focus on the Iranian military as well as proxies outside Iran.
On the other hand, Iran said any Israeli retaliation would be met with an immediate and severe response. An Iranian foreign affairs official said the response would come in seconds, not hours.
And back in the U.S., the House will vote on a foreign aid bill for Israel later this week. It will be separate from a Ukraine aid bill. And today, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said her department would use sanctions to disrupt Iran's malign activities.
And House Speaker Mike Johnson is pushing towards a vote on aid for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. But meanwhile, some of his colleagues are looking at a motion to oust him.
Our Washington correspondent, Louise Martinez, is in D.C. Louise, what can you tell us?
Yes, of course. So today, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson called himself a wartime speaker. He said he was unconcerned with efforts to oust him, that he will not resign, and that we're in the middle of a civilizational struggle for which his foreign aid plan, his plan for supplemental aid to U.S. allies, is the path forward. Let's listen to what Speaker Johnson had to say on this new proposal.
I put out a preliminary plan. As you all know, on these measures to handle these matters, from Israel to Ukraine to the Indo-Pacific region. And the fourth bill in this package would be our priorities, which is the Repo Act, and we implement the loan concept and all of this in the supplemental discussion. But the will of our body is to find every possible way, using this legislation and every legislation that we pass, to try to use as leverage to get the administration to get control of that border. The American people demand it. The American people deserve it.
Well, the new plan is four separate bills, one for Ukraine, one for Israel, one for Taiwan, and a fourth one containing House Republican priorities. But none of the details of this bill have been made public, and Republican Congressman Bob Good, the chairman of the Freedom House Caucus, has already indicated he will vote against this new proposal because it does not prioritize border security. Let's listen to what Representative Bob Good, the chairman of the Freedom Caucus, had to say about this new proposal.
The Speaker just announced that border would be not germane to the bills, so we're not going to allow border security to be part of the package. That's a big, big problem.
So earlier today, Representative Tom Massey, the Republican from Kentucky, had expressed during closed doors meeting with House Republicans that he's willing to support the motion introduced 3 weeks ago by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, a Republican from Georgia, to oust Speaker Johnson. Let's listen to what Representative Tom Massey had to say.
Because the motion is going to get called, okay? Does anybody doubt that? The motion will get called, and then he's going to lose more votes than Kevin McCarthy.
If the motion is brought up at the House floor, some Democrats and Republicans could simply vote to table the motion. But according to Representative Tom Massey, the ball is in Speaker Johnson's court, and it's depending on what he decides to do with supplemental aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan that will decide the future of his speakership. Back to you.
All right, Louise Martinez, thank you so much. How did we get to this point of Iran launching this massive attack we heard about over the weekend? To answer that question, I spoke with international military strategist Colonel Darren Gobb. Colonel Darren Gobb, thank you so much for joining us again. Good to have you back on the show. Talk about the circumstances that led up to Iran's attack on Israel this past weekend.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Good afternoon. Good to see you again. But the circumstances ultimately that led to this was, if you go back to October 7th, everybody knows what happened on October 7th with Hamas and how Iran is supporting all these different militia groups and various proxy fighters. And so one of the things Israel is claimed to have done as far as, you know, Iran accused Israel of doing this was the going into Syria and bombing the consulate there and killing some Iranian generals, senior leadership who is in the country. Israel has not claimed credit for that yet, but Iran has said that Israel is responsible. And as a result of that, this is how Israel or how Iran responded. Fortunately, it was largely a massive failure on behalf of Iran. But the next question will be, of course, you know, what does Israel do as well?
Yeah, and the last time Iran attacked Israel directly was in 1979. What's kept them from doing so since then, despite all the enmity between these two Middle Eastern nations?
Well, first of all, Israel has always been very successful against Iran, you know, blowing up different nuclear reactors or other activities that Israel is really good at. Second of all, Iran has had economic challenges, some of it self-imposed, and when other nations put economic sanctions on them. So their ability to afford that kind of a fight has been difficult at best. And that's why the sanctions worked so well, because you broke the Iranian bank and their capability to sell oil. They can't fund the war. And so that's kept them largely on the sidelines. That, and they've had other strategic concerns with Afghanistan, because there are things happening there. And the simple fact that there are many nations in the Middle East, like Saudi Arabia and Jordan, that are strategic competitors against Iran. And if they get, you know, more awakened to an aggressive Iran now, they are likely more to side against Iran than they would be against Israel.
But now we've gotten to this point where Iran has actually attacked Israel for the first time in decades. What role, if any, has the United States played in the shifting dynamics in recent years?
Well, not all good, unfortunately. So when you're dealing with what I call the Obama 3.0 foreign policy under Biden right now, it's a mix of apologizing to everybody throughout the Middle East for us being the United States. It's the removal of economic sanctions on Iran and a number of other things where we've emboldened and strengthened what you would call terrorist-like forces or even terror states through our own actions. So that's one of the issues on the negative side. On the positive side, though, under the Trump administration, you had the Abraham Accords, which are still really kind of playing out a little bit when you see the alignment of Jordan and Saudi Arabia against Iran and more in support of, not necessarily directly Israel, but more in support of their own national interests, which is not aligned with Iran at all. So that's where you bring in the United States in support of Israel directly by shooting down drones and things like that. But also there's the ability to actually build a small coalition of nations that are around Israel that will guard their own interests against Iran.
All right. Colonel Darren Gobb, thank you so much for coming back on the show. Have a great day.
Thanks, Chris. You too.
And the House is sending impeachment articles against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas to the Senate today. House Republicans voted to impeach Mayorkas in February over his handling of the southern border.
The Department of Homeland Security is calling the move an evidence-free impeachment, saying there have been no high crimes or misdemeanors. They also call the process cynical and hypocritical.
Some Republicans say they're concerned the Democrat-led Senate will move to quickly dismiss the impeachment. Senate Leader Chuck Schumer said the chamber will move forward and resolve the situation as quickly as possible.
The motion to impeach Mayorkas is unlikely to pass. A simple majority is required to end the trial. And ICE officials in Boston say officers have arrested an illegal immigrant charged with raping a minor in Massachusetts. ICE say officers first arrested the Brazilian national and his parents in 2021 after crossing into the U.S. illegally. An immigration judge released the family on an order of recognizance. Police arrested the 20-year-old man in January on charges of rape and enticement of a child under 16.
But ICE says a district court ignored their detainer request and released the suspect on a $5,000 bail. ICE says deportation officers took the suspect into custody near the end of last month.
The ICE Boston director warned of the threat to children in the community and said the agency will always prioritize public safety. Republican counties in Colorado are suing the state and its governor. They want to be able to arrest and deport illegal immigrants and work with federal authorities.
Douglas and El Paso County filed the complaint on Monday. The lawsuit targets two sanctuary state laws. They prohibit local law enforcement from immigration arrests and local courts from sharing information with ICE.
They also block the local governments from working with the federal government on immigration matters in any way. The conservative counties allege that the laws violate the distribution of powers in the Colorado Constitution.
And President Biden's campaign is laser-focused on the largest battleground state, Pennsylvania. He's there again, this time to contrast his tax policy with Trump's.
Joining us now is NTD's White House correspondent, Iris Tao, who's in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Hello, Iris. Tell us more about Biden's trip there today. What's its focus?
So we're right now waiting for President Biden's remarks slated for 2 p.m. Eastern time this afternoon. And right now, this speech will mark the opening of his three-day campaign swing in the battleground state of Pennsylvania. And here today in Scranton, a working-class city of about 75,000 people, Biden will focus on the message that he's a candidate for the working class, while his predecessor, former President Trump, is a candidate for the millionaire class. Or like Biden's 2020 slogan goes, it's Scranton versus Park Avenue. And Biden's campaign also told us that specifically Biden will focus on his tax policies today by trying to contrast it with Trump's. Biden will also vow to raise taxes on wealthy Americans by, quote, making them pay their fair share. Here's the White House press secretary trying to defend that message at a Monday press briefing. Watch.
I think that the rise in prices of gas and inflation, which is still rising, is linked to the president's request that the richest Americans pay their fair share.
Making sure that the wealthiest among us, the billionaires and corporations, pay their fair share, we believe is the way to go here, not putting that burden on everyday Americans.
So the economy has been Biden's almost worst polling issues in this election, and Biden has been trying to reframe this conversation about the economy by insisting that Bidenomics is working. And while both Biden and Trump have vowed to not raise taxes on average Americans, former President Trump over the weekend also campaigning right here in the battleground state of Pennsylvania, accused Biden of trying to raise taxes by four times. Watch.
You like the fact that we were energy independent on all of the things. You like the fact that I got you the largest tax cut in the history of our country. And they're going to raise your taxes by four times. Four times. Think of that.
And as former President Trump sits at a New York courtroom for most of this week, Biden will be campaigning today here in Scranton, tomorrow in Pittsburgh, and on Thursday in Philadelphia. So a huge focus for the Biden campaign in the battleground state that his campaign calls a crucial one that will play a key role in Biden's reelection bid this year. Back to you.
All right, Iris Tao, live for us there in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Thank you so much. Next up, a judge dismissed some claims against Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg yesterday. Hundreds of lawsuits accuse Meta and other social media companies of causing children to become addicted to their platforms. Those include Alphabet, which operates Google and YouTube, ByteDance, which operates TikTok, and Snap, which operates Snapchat.
The lawsuits assert that children suffered physical, mental, and emotional harm from social media use. Many allegedly experienced anxiety, depression, and even suicide.
25 of those cases sought to hold Zuckerberg personally liable. Meta's billionaire founder is accused of creating a false impression about the platform's safety, despite repeated warnings they were unfit for children.
The judge ruled that Zuckerberg's public persona doesn't necessarily make him liable. Several states and school districts have also filed pending lawsuits against Meta. The company denies any wrongdoing.
And the Justice Department is reportedly planning to file an antitrust lawsuit against Live Nation. That's according to the Wall Street Journal, citing people familiar with the matter. Live Nation, which is the parent company of Ticketmaster, has faced issues in the past over its dominance in the ticketing industry. Critics suggest it's only able to raise ticket prices because of a lack of competition. But Live Nation claims prices are determined by the artists' teams and venues, as well as supply and demand. Lawmakers started raising questions about the company's practices since the pre-sale meltdown of Taylor Swift's Eras Tour in 2022. Maine Governor Janet Mills announced she's approving a bill that would change how the state's electoral college votes are awarded. Instead of the current system, where votes are awarded based on congressional districts or the state's popular vote, Maine's votes will go to the winner of the national popular vote. This is part of a movement by the National Popular Vote Group to have states enter into an agreement where the presidency goes to the candidate with the most votes nationwide.
Supporters argue it ensures every vote counts equally, while critics say it sidesteps the Constitution and could silence smaller states' voices.
Governor Mills allowed the bill to become a law without her signature.
Maine now joins 15 other states and the District of Columbia in adopting this change.
The pact needs 270 delegates to take effect. Maine's addition would bring the total to 209. And former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani still has to pay $148 million. A federal judge upheld the judgment on Monday. A jury ruled in December that the former Trump attorney had to pay that sum. It's based on defamation, emotional stress, and punitive damages for two Georgia election workers. His legal team said the emotional harm statements were time-barred and that there was no evidence of distress. The judge did not accept those arguments. An Idaho law that criminalizes cross-sex procedures for minors can broadly take effect. The Supreme Court yesterday decided it's not unconstitutional. Idaho's governor signed the law last year. It makes it a felony to provide cross-sex procedures and puberty-blocking drugs to minors.
Healthcare professionals can face up to 10 years in prison for providing procedures and drugs that are inconsistent with a child's biological sex.
In February, the state filed an emergency request to block an order from a lower court that stopped implementation of the law.
Monday's High Court ruling allows Idaho to enforce the law while the lower courts deal with questions related to the issue. Lawyers for teenagers who identify as another gender have challenged the legislation. They say cross-sex procedures can alleviate gender dysphoria. The Maui Fire Department is set to release a report showing how it responded to the devastating wildfires that swept through the Hawaiian town of Lahaina last summer. The Hawaii Attorney General is also expected to soon release an investigation on what happened before, during, and after the fire. State officials have said the fire destroyed around 3,000 properties and caused over $5.5 billion in damage. It started August 8, 2023, killed 101 people, and became the deadliest U.S. wildfire in over 100 years. A brand of gluten-free mini bagels are being recalled because they may contain gluten. Feel Good Foods has issued the nationwide voluntary recall due to cross-contamination. The company received one consumer report of an adverse reaction to gluten.
The affected products include gluten-free plain and everything-flavored cream cheese-stuffed mini bagels. They're found in the frozen section of stores in a yellow box or a white box with a blue and white label showing photos of the mini bagels.
According to the FDA, both products have best-by dates from 5/29/24 to 9/17/25. The dates are listed on the bottom of the boxes.
If you have any questions, you can call or email Feel Good Foods. Up ahead, over 100 firefighters are battling the aftermath of a fire in Denmark today. Flames ripped through one of the capital's best-known buildings, causing its spire to collapse.
And a U.S. citizen arrested on drug charges in Moscow appears in court today. Details on the allegations and the penalties he could face.
South Korea marks the 10th anniversary of the Seoul ferry disaster. Some families are still looking for answers after more than 300 victims died in the accident. More in just a moment here on NTD News Today. All right, and now we have some short headlines from Russia, Denmark, and other European countries. A fire ripped through Copenhagen's old stock exchange today. It's one of the Danish capital's best-known buildings.
The spire was shaped like the intertwined tails of four dragons. It collapsed as flames engulfed it overnight.
Over 100 people are working to contain the fire. The operation is expected to go on for at least 24 hours. The island of Capri is increasing security measures today. That's ahead of the G7 foreign ministers meeting.
The gathering on the Italian island will take place from Wednesday until Friday. The ministers from major Western powers are expected to demand a ceasefire in Gaza, as well as a de-escalation of tensions between Israel and Iran.
Georgia's parliament started its first reading on a controversial foreign agents bill. That's after more than 5,000 people demonstrated yesterday outside parliament against the bill, facing off against riot police and water cannons.
The bill would require organizations receiving more than 20% of their funding from abroad to register as agents of foreign influence. Georgian critics have compared it to Russian legislation used by the Kremlin to crack down on dissent.
Georgia's government has faced accusations of authoritarianism and pro-Russia leanings.
Western countries, including the U.S., Britain, and Germany, have urged Georgia not to pass the bill.
With tensions soaring between Russia and the U.S. over Ukraine, a U.S. citizen appeared in court today in Moscow on drug trafficking charges.
Robert Woodland Romanov faces charges of trafficking large amounts of illegal drugs as part of an organized group. The criminal offense carries a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison.
The trial began in March. A new court hearing is scheduled for next week.
The U.S. State Department has confirmed the detention of the U.S. citizen, but has not provided further comment due to privacy considerations. The Biden administration's trade policy is under scrutiny. U.S. Trade Representative Katherine Tai is testifying before the House Ways and Means Committee right now.
For many years now, we have seen how the PRC's non-market policies and practices, left unchecked, have devastated many working communities and industries across our country, including many in your districts. Steel, aluminum, solar panels, batteries, electric vehicles, and critical minerals, just to name a few. As the president said during his State of the Union address, this administration will continue to stand up to the PRC, and we are prepared to use our trade tools in this effort, including through new Section 301 action and our four-year review of the China Section 301 tariffs, which assesses.
During the hearing, committee chairman Jason Smith raised concerns over the Biden administration's trade priorities.
He said President Biden's trade agenda ignores Congress, fails to secure critical supply chains, and lacks enforcement over trade with China.
The chairman said his committee stands ready to hold China accountable for its human rights abuses and predatory trade practices.
Tai, on the other hand, defends the Biden administration's trade policy, saying it's committed to empower American workers and the middle class.
And a Pacific nation the U.S. and China are competing for influence over is headed for election tomorrow. Who gets elected next could shape Beijing's influence in the South Pacific. It's called the Solomon Islands, and a powerful opposition figure has expressed concern over growing Chinese influence.
Under the current prime minister, the Solomon Islands cut ties with Taiwan and recognized Beijing instead. It also signed a security deal with China, which set off alarms in the West over concerns it could pave the way for a Chinese military base 1,000 miles off the coast of Australia.
China has poured tens of millions of dollars into a development fund used by the Solomon Islands politicians. Critics accuse Beijing of using this as a slush fund to curry favor with politicians. If reelected, the Solomon Islands' current prime minister has pledged to bolster ties with China.
A slew of measures to fend off Chinese espionage. German Chancellor Olaf Scholz is working to avoid surveillance on his trip to China. That's according to German media reports.
His delegation brought disposable burner phones, and most members left behind their laptops that can connect with internal networks in Germany.
Germany's security agency also told the delegation to be on their guard at all the time and never leave important devices behind. It said hotels and safes are not actually safe.
The delegation is urged not to use other people's chargers, or else data on their phone or laptop could be stolen. Public Wi-Fi offered by China is also not trusted.
The German security agency also warned the delegation that their conversations could be monitored at any time, including inside cars and bedrooms.
Russia and China were discovered trading disguised copper to avoid taxes and sanctions. The copper is altered to make it look like scrap metal by shredding it. Sources told Reuters that both exporters and importers can benefit from the lower tariffs on scrap metal. They said copper wire rod was shredded in China's Xinjiang region. It escaped notice until recently because the Chinese communist regime has restricted access to that region. That's after the regime was criticized internationally for repressing ethnic minorities there.
Sales of copper rod disguised as scrap started in December between China and Russia. There are big discrepancies in data from China and Russia on how much scrap moved between the two countries.
Russia and China were not known for doing trade in copper scrap until this recent finding.
South Korea today held a ceremony to mark the 10th anniversary of the Sewol ferry disaster. 304 victims died in the accident.
Families of victims and others attended a memorial service for the 250 children who died on the ferry during a field trip.
The scenes of the 6,800-ton vessel sinking on live TV stunned the East Asian nation. Disbelief turned to outrage as it became known that the captain and crew had abandoned the ship.
The children were told to stay in the cabin and wait for rescue. Investigations found that the ship's structure had been illegally modified and that it had been overloaded.
The captain is serving a life sentence.
And a South Korean mom works through her pain on the stage. Her son was one of the 250 children who died in the Sewol ferry disaster 10 years ago. In this play, seven mothers who lost children in the disaster explore their journey of mourning.
I will no longer hide in the darkness, nor be defeated by sorrow, nor cry in despair. I will live a life that shines brighter and is happier than anyone else's. Listening to the voice of my heart conveys, I want to dream every day for myself and live out this new life that our young man has given me in the most wonderful way possible.
The play is one of five that Lee and other mothers have performed over the last 8 years. They remember their children and mourn, but they also call for justice and answers as to how so many children, who were told to stay in the ship's cabins, died while the captain and crew escaped.
I'm so grateful to be able to live as my true self through theater. And I think of theater as a method of fighting. It has become a tool for fighting, for uncovering the truth behind the Sewol ferry disaster. I'm thankful for that.
The ship's structure had been illegally modified and it was overloaded. Safety regulations were ignored. Rescue efforts were slow and largely ineffective. Young man was 17 years old. Lee's thoughts often wander to the road where she saw him off to school that day.
Young man, it's already been 10 years. I believe you are living happily there. I always keep you in my heart, trying to be happy myself, to make you happy. I'm working hard in theater.
There have been a number of investigations and inquiries into the disaster, but the mothers say none have provided the answers they are seeking.
It's been a chilly spring so far in Denmark, but the country's organic dairy cows are still hungry. Now, Danish farmers are herding them onto green pastures for springtime grazing. NTD's Andrew Thomas has more on the celebration.
One could call Denmark's Organic Day the running of the cows. The annual release of the cattle is a beloved tradition for Danes.
Today is the day where the cows are getting out on the grass and they've been inside all winter and now we're really looking forward to letting them out on the fresh green grass and they'll spend the summer out there grassing.
Thousands visit dairy farms across the Scandinavian country to enjoy the events.
We started 3 years ago, so this is our third Öko Day. And I think the first time we had about 2,000 or 3,000 visitors. And last year we had 6,000. That was quite a lot.
Skoltz owns around 100 dairy cows.
The moment they get out on the grass and they feel the grass under the toes, they will make these funny movements, and we call it dancing, yeah.
Amid cheering crowds, the cows run onto green pastures.
I think it's the energy you have. It's a little bit, you can feel it yourself if you start up in the morning and you see the sun and you jump out to it, and it's exactly the same the cows are doing.
30 minutes after their release, the cows are settling down in their new environment, just in time for people to enjoy lunch.
I think one thing is it's important for them to see where their feed is coming from, where their food is coming from, because we are living, a lot of us are now living in the big cities, and we are not so close to our food as we would love to be.
The first Danish Organic Day was held in 2005 with around 10,000 visitors. Since then, organizers Organic Denmark say more than 2 million Danes have enjoyed the annual cow release. Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
A rare find is on display at a museum near Munich, two massive bones found by German boys last year. Scientists say they belonged to prehistoric elephants.
9-year-old and 10-year-old brothers first found the bones.
Their discovery provided an idea of what the long-extinct animal looked like.
Scientists say the mammal was about 16 feet tall and weighed up to 12 tons.
The species lived outside Munich around 10 million years ago.
Konstantin and I, at first, I thought it was wood. But Dad said, no, it's a bone. And then, unfortunately, when we uncovered it, a really big chunk fell on it. And Dad was afraid that the bone had broken. But luckily, it wasn't broken after all.
A total of 120 bones were found following extensive excavations near a small Bavarian village.
The find is now on display at a prehistoric museum run by the boy's father. A $2 billion space telescope could be on the chopping block thanks to NASA's upcoming budget. The Chandra X-ray Observatory launched in 1999 to study the universe. For 25 years, it's been orbiting Earth, looking into deep space, black holes, galaxy clusters, and remnants of exploded stars. But the Biden administration's 2025 budget could effectively terminate Chandra.
Funding is set to be cut from $71 million to $41 million. The following year, funding drops to $26 million. By fiscal year 2029, the budget only allocates $5 million to the project. NASA has already announced plans to draw down Chandra to minimal operations. And Atlanta's Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport once again ranks as the busiest in the world. That's according to the Airports Council International's preliminary list for last year. Dubai is in the number two spot this time after increased usage. Four other U.S. airports are in the top 10. They include Dallas-Fort Worth, Denver, Los Angeles, and Chicago O'Hare. For round-the-clock original news coverage, visit us at ntd.com or download our NTD app.
And be sure to stick around for NTD Newsroom at 3 p.m. Eastern. We'll cover more stories from the U.S. and around the world.